Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favourite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah!
If you answered yes to one, two, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon! That's right, your favourite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made. You're listening to the Oz Movies Podcast, only on the Oz Network.
It is the Oz Network for day number 9 of Oscar 10 days, month, and a week and a half. We've yet to decide on a name. We're welcoming any suggestions before tomorrow. It's our last single-digit day. Forgive us. It's been a long 9 days, but we're here to talk about a lot of penises, a lot of bums, a lot of boobs, a lot of sex, and a lot of Willem Dafoe, or a little bit less Willem Dafoe. I don't know. He's covered under a lot of makeup in this one. We are talking about Poor Things, one of the heavy favorites to win Best Picture, or one of the heavy favorites to lose to Oppenheimer, I think, from the director of Ben's favorite Best Picture nominated film we did many years ago, The Favorite. And I think this is his favorite film of Yorgos Lanthimos's esteemed career. My name is Colin, and we.
And my name is Ben, and I must go punch that baby. There were quotes about touching genitals and stuff, but I just can't find them. There were so many good, like, genital quotes.
There was
quotes.
One I wanted, but, like, she grabbed me in my hairy parts or something like that. I'm like, I couldn't remember specifically what it was.
And whatever a line is where she keeps saying, like, let's go, like, bump uglies or something. I can't remember what it was, but like, oh no,
this furious jumping.
Yeah, furious jumping is. But like, I can't find them. Oh, but anyway, I want to. You need to use that for like your children. I want to go punch that baby.
One of the best lines in the movie. Look, I'll start off by saying I didn't hate this movie. I didn't absolutely love this movie either. I have issues with this that have nothing to do with the gratuitous sex in the movie. I have similar issues to this that I had with Killers of the Flower Moon and maybe Oppenheimer. This is like, you don't need to be 2 hours and 20 minutes for the story you're telling. And I'll reserve my main judgment for it later on. But like, this is a very unique movie. It's one of a kind. I'm certainly not going to forget it. It's clever. It's creative. It's essentially a modern day dirty version of Frankenstein. I love the Frankenstein movies. It checks some of the boxes, doesn't check all the boxes for me. It's not going to be at the top of my rankings, but it's not going to be the bottom.
I love this movie. I thought it was great. It was just fun. And I think I said yesterday, it's kind of like this year's Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's a bit quirky. It's a bit weird. It's a bit all over the place. And yeah, I didn't know that this was kind of a bit sci-fi, and I kind of like the style of it. I mean, if The Favourite was this good, I wouldn't have turned out. I mean, that was a movie about lesbians. I should have liked that movie, but I was bored. This, not boring. And I still got to see nudity as well. So I was happy with that. Not just boobs, penises as well, as you said.
A lot of them. A
lot of penises. But it was just something interesting about it and just such an odd story. I mean, I know the story of Frankenstein. Have I ever sat down and watched a Frankenstein movie? Probably not. But it was just entertaining. I think Emma Stone's brilliant. I think Mark Ruffalo is brilliant. I think Willem Dafoe is brilliant. I think the other guy, who I don't know who he is, but he's brilliant. And also, as I said yesterday, I feel this has got a lot more subtle messaging about women empowerment than Barbie does. So, you know, it's about a woman who's finding herself and, like, you know, getting out there into the world and growing up and being a woman and becomes a doctor at the end of it. So, I mean, yeah, okay, it's a bit of a different type of doctor. She makes somebody into a goat. But so I, what? I love
this.
It.
This is
fun.
A movie where I'm taking some issue with some of the intentions and interpretation. This being about female empowerment.
I'm not a woman, and even I can see it. Subtlety, okay, women's rights. Subtlety, not in your face.
There is nothing subtle about this movie. Nothing is subtle
compared
about it.
Compared to Barbie, it is.
Not even close. But like, here's the thing. One, this is a character in a scenario that would never happen in the real world.
Of course.
For another thing, I don't think that anything in this movie is about holding women down as a gender or anything like that. And I feel like part of the problem I have with this movie is in the ending, which it's like, is the message essentially supposed to be that this is female empowerment because now she's become just as evil and just as controlling and just as wicked as some of the men who controlled her throughout the movie? Because this is sort of like, it's one of these endings where it's like, well, she doesn't do anything better than anybody else at the end. If anything, she just becomes the villain. And it's sort of an unfortunate thing in today's society where it's like, women are saying, oh, if men could be evil, we could be evil too. It's like, but that's kind of missing the message. This isn't an empowerment movie. It is definitely a movie about flipping the gender role, but not necessarily about empowerment as far as I'm concerned.
Everything you just said is how Barbie ends, because what happens at the end of Barbie, they strip men of all their rights and turn it back into dictator Barbie land. So I'm sorry, you just completely contradict yourself on Barbie. I mean, look, I see it, but like, I think... I read an interview that Emma Stone did where I think it was with CNN, and they were basically saying about how like, oh, like this movie's very controversial because like it's got lots of graphic sex in it. And like essentially like at the beginning, it's kind of like she's a child and she's having sex. Like this is wrong. And like Emma Stone's like, well, no, like this is what drew me to this project. It's about a woman who's finding herself. It's about a woman who like is using sex as a tool to get by, which is not necessarily a bad thing. There's a woman's discovering her body, and it's kind of like frowned upon that, you know, a woman should have sex and like be this way, but like she's kind of doing it away. So like I definitely see what you're saying. Again, everybody watches a movie and can interpret it differently. I interpret Barbie differently to how you interpret Barbie, and like I've interpreted this differently. I think it was just done in a way where it was just, yeah, like at the end of the day, is she any better than everybody who's treated her? No. But it's also like this movie, like, yes, Barbie doesn't take itself too seriously for the most part, but then as I said yesterday, it's those parts where it goes, changes lane and tries to be like, we're a very serious movie. This doesn't. This movie's just like quirky and weird the whole time. So I think like the ending's fitting of this movie. I've never seen, you were talking about the other day with Noah, some of those really quirky directors that have like those really weird type of movies. Is it Coen Brothers? And there's the
Coen Brothers.
There's the other one you were talking about the other day with Noah. I can't remember who you're talking about. It will come to you eventually. But like, it's kind of that quirky style where it's like if you watch a Tim Burton movie, you know what you're gonna get. I'm not a Tim Burton fan, so therefore the style of his movie. So like, this is like a real interesting style of movie. Which as soon as you say it's done by the person who does The Favourite, even though that was boring, it still was a bit, from what I can remember of the 10 minutes I watched of it, a little bit quirky and a little bit interesting. But yeah, I know. I love the style of this movie, the way they try to do that, you know, because again, as I said, it doesn't really take itself too seriously. I'd be very intrigued to read the book this is based on to see if it's really like this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've read some of the criticism about this movie is that this movie's misinterpreted the book. So, and the only thing I could really dig up is that some people who've read the book have said, it's very clear in the book that the book is being written from the point of view of the fiancé, and that even the lead character says, this is his interpretation, this wasn't the real story. Whereas this movie's presenting it like this is her story, and that's kind of missing the point. I don't necessarily have an issue with them. I think that the ending fits this movie. It's just the people who are interpreting this like... you could say, okay, this is about female empowerment of sexuality or something like that. But again, it's from the point of view of a child, you know? And I also don't think that you have to be a woman to understand a movie like this. I mean, everybody takes out of it what they want to take out of it. I'm looking at this from the point of view of this is a child. And I think about, okay, well, if my children were in an adult body, how would they behave? And you see a lot of the behavior in this movie and you're like, well, this is what they would do, right? And that's one of the other things I think is maybe being a little bit missed in this movie. It's like, is she learning that she can use sex for money? She's learning, hey, this is something that I enjoy doing. I need money, I'll do it. It's kind of like a child to do things. You know, like if I'm trying to get my children to do something, I'm like, hey, do you want to play the Nintendo later or not? Yes. Okay, then pick up your toys. No, I don't want to pick my toys. Okay, then no Nintendo. All right, I'll pick up my toys.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I think that's where the women aspect comes into it, because a man couldn't do this. A man, like, as a if Casper's, in an adult body and discovers masturbation. Like, I mean, a man's not going to be able to easily get what he wants out of sex compared to a woman. And I'm not meaning that disparaging. I think most people would agree that women have power over men where they can do this. And that's where I think at the end of the day, that's where I get that female message, and that she all of a sudden, like, this isn't really spoiling. I mean, it kind of is, it kind of isn't. But like the whole bit where she becomes a prostitute in Paris, like, she's like, oh, so you're going to pay me for this, but I like doing this and I get money. Okay, that works. So like, whereas as a man, somebody's not going to come up to me and go, Ben, become a prostitute, who's going to pay me to have sex? So like, it's, to me, that's where I kind of get that. But you're right. Like, it's, and that's where I think it's interesting. And maybe that's why I like this movie as well, because I've always sort of liked a good body swap movie, or like a, you know, like a Freaky Friday type of movie. I kind of like those. And I think this is, yeah, you're right, it is one of those movies, but it's not like in your face of like Lindsay Lohan and Jamie Lee Curtis looking in the mirror going like, ah, we're swap bodies. This is just like, oh, cool. Willem Dafoe put a baby's brain in a woman's body. And it's just, it's interesting. It's almost like a coming of age movie in just a really quirky, odd way. That's why I think Emma Stone is brilliant. Like, I really think she is so good.
Oh, she is so good.
Yeah. I'm glad you agree.
It's a tough character to play.
Very much so. And like, I'm glad you agree, because I kind of got this weird feeling that you're not an Emma Stone fan from memory. But it's
no, I don't have an issue with her.
Oh, I thought you did. Maybe I'm thinking of someone else. But like, yeah, this is what I was saying like yesterday. Like, to me, it's so tough. Like, if I had to choose best actress, if it was down to me, it's between her and Sandra Hüller. I think they're the standouts in the category. And so where I see Emma Stone is technically slightly favorite ahead of Lily Gladstone, if she wins, I'll be very happy. No disrespect to Lily Gladstone, but I think that Emma Stone does a far better job. But yeah, it's a very unique character to play. And this isn't one of these ones where, like, at the beginning where she's kind of like mentally disabled almost in a way. And I thought, oh, are there criticisms because, you know, got a non-disabled actor to play this, but she's not. Like, that's not the point. Yeah. This isn't Rain Man. This isn't Leonardo DiCaprio and What's Eating Gilbert Grape, where you'd be frowning upon
that. Why
didn't
they actually put an infant's brain into Emma Stone's body?
Exactly. Why didn't they put Noah or me in this role, like, at the beginning? Somebody who doesn't have an adult brain.
I think the good things about this movie also kind of tie into my issues with this movie. I think that this movie branches out beyond just her having sex. That is a large part of the movie, but I think my issue with it is that there's no proper pacing of everything. So you spend so much time of her working in the brothel, so much time of her on her getaway with Mark Ruffalo and everything, so much time of her masturbating. And then some of the most interesting stuff in this movie, which is where I believe this story is also trying to tell the story of, well, what would the world look like from a child's point of view? That's why we have the character, the other character on the ship that she meets, where she first starts talking about like the poor people. He shows her like the poor people, and she gives Mark Ruffalo's money away and stuff like that. And then she has a conversation with him. Those are two very brief moments in the movie. It's like, but spend a little bit more time on that, because the ending of this movie is not about sex. The ending of this movie is about her choosing to, you know, accept one life over the other. And then the second part of that being that you have the last half hour of this movie, and this is a 2.5 hour long movie, where everything just goes by way too quickly. And I wish that they had maybe taken 5 minutes out of a sequence here or there throughout the movie where there were drawn out stuff, which, like Killers of the Flower Moon, none of it was boring, but could you have trimmed it and not sacrificed the movie? Yes. Because all of a sudden you throw in this last minute plot of, well, somebody's dying and she comes back, and then you throw another character in there. And this is where my biggest complaint comes up. And it's about how poorly written a certain character in this movie. Let's just say it is the Billy Zane of this movie who comes in and essentially, from his point of view, does nothing wrong. But the movie feels the need to, we need to find a cheap way to make the audience hate him so quickly. So let's do the most outlandish thing we could possibly do and then give him this consequence. But instead of actually just taking the time to build a character where you might accept this is a bad guy, you have to try to convince the audience that since he's doing nothing wrong from his point of view, he's like, you have amnesia. This type of surgery, this type of science doesn't exist. Let's just throw some over the top thing in there so the audience hates him. It's cheap. It's so last minute. And the last half hour of this movie, which to me was the most interesting part of the story, was just way too quickly moving by.
Yeah, I would agree. This is one of the ones that, like, all these movies are so long this year. We talk about that every year, but I swear they're getting longer. But, like, this wasn't one to me where it was a bad thing that it was that long, but I agree with you completely. I think that the whole plot with her ex-husband, husband, whatever he is, comes back in was very rushed because, like, I think there's one aspect in one part of this movie where, like, she gets, like, recognized from her past life and then they just kind of brush over it. And then all of a sudden he gets, like, brought back into the fray right at the end. And it was very odd. And because, but there's little things around that where it's like, well, clearly she wasn't a liked person because of, like, the people in her house. Like, so, like, why isn't she? And you never kind of find out what was wrong with her, like, you know, to lead people to not like her. So, yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that was a bit weird. And, yeah, let's take this guy who has every right to be like, oh, my God, you're alive. There you are. Hello. To, hey, let's do maybe one of the worst things imaginable that men can do to women. And you're like, what? so, yeah, like, it does go a bit full
and
on.
And maybe in the book there's more development. It's just not in this movie.
I'm sure there is. Like, I mean, again, having rewatched all the Harry Potters last year, and there were so many questions I had, like, and Casey's obsessed with it. And she's like, yeah, they cut all of that from, and that's in the book. I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense if they explain it in the book, because this makes no sense in the movie. So, yeah, like, I completely agree with you there. But were you aware that, like, this was a bit science fiction-y? That, like, I mean, obviously, like, when you've got a plot about taking a baby's brain and putting it in an adult, it's a bit out there. But, like, I'm talking about, like, when they go to, like, Lisbon and you've kind of almost got, like, flying, like, I mean, they're cable cars, but then, like, you got freaking Willem Dafoe, like, burping gas with visible bubbles and just, like, some of the visual style of it. Like, it's almost science fiction-y in a way. It's almost like not steampunk, but you know what I mean when I'm trying to go, where it's a bit steampunky.
The funny thing is, one of the criticisms I read was that apparently in the book, the whole steampunk aspect of this was much stronger and that they toned it down so much for the movie. So it was kind of meant to be like that. I mean, I saw the trailer. The trailers to me just made this look like it was a better Tim Burton movie. And Tim Burton just sort of has that, it's like that style he has where I wasn't necessarily expecting that the world would be sci-fi, but I like that. I mean, I love the way that this movie's filmed. Like, nothing, everything looks artificial in this, intentionally artificial.
Yeah.
You know, when they're on the ship, like, everything looks artificial. You know, when you look outside the window, it looks artificial. But yeah, when you add, like, all the science fiction aspects in there, because you could have told this story, like, you go back and you watch the Frankenstein movie now, or even I read the Frankenstein book last year. And, you know, I think the book, I really see a lot of similarities to this. Not so much with the movie, but more so to the book, because the book was Frankenstein was a lot deeper. It also had a lot more to do with, like, the consequence of this creation and stuff like that, which this movie doesn't. I think it's intentionally not dealing with that, but that's very still grounded in reality. And I kind of like this movie said, we're going to make this so outside reality. You're going to be looking at, I don't know when it's supposed to be, like, late 1800s, early 1900s, but it is almost like it's a different reality, you know? That was very cool. Now, one other thing that I just want to comment on that Jamie's opinion of this.
Oh, but she liked she it. Mark Ruffalo.
Well, so she had wanted to see this when she saw the trailer to it. And then when I said yesterday, I got one movie left to watch. You know, do you want to watch this with me? We can watch something else, but I'm going to watch this anyways. She says, I don't know. And I'm like, apparently it's got nudity and Mark Ruffalo's naked in it. And all of a sudden you could literally see her face break up. And I don't know about you, but, like, I'm not saying I there's any issue with him, but Mark Ruffalo's always been one of these guys. I am a huge Mark Ruffalo fan. Like, he is, you know, on my Mount Rushmore of modern actors.
Your Mount Ruffalo more.
My Mount Ruffalo, yes. But, like, I found it very weird when I started to realize, like, women love this guy, like, to the point where when you take all the Avengers actors, you take the Chris Hemsworth, the Chris Evans, you add the DC, you have the Chris Pine, you add all the Chris's in there, all the Ryans. Women will choose Mark Ruffalo over him. Like, I don't get it. But it's not like I'm like, wow, I don't get it at all. But it's like, really? But really? But, like, he has that power.
Well, but wasn't he, like, there was a period there where he was in, like, a lot of romantic like, he was in that Reese Witherspoon one, the ghost one. And it was
13 going, and it was 13 going on 30, which kind of started it. And, you know, Jamie and I covered that. I don't know if it was last year or the year before. And similarities to that, kind of like a child in an adult's body as well, when Mark Ruffalo's in it. But I even told her during that, I'm like, what is it with Mark Ruffalo? She goes, I think it's kind of the nice guy aspect to it. But in this movie, what I found so interesting is that Mark Ruffalo is Hugh Grant. Yeah, kind of like America's Hugh Grant. But in this movie, he's playing the exact opposite. And it's like he was made for it. Like, I never expected that I would see Mark Ruffalo play the most. He's playing the Willem Dafoe role.
Yeah.
I'm choking on it. Choking on his beauty. Blues.
Yeah, I think. And I think it's, you know how we recently talked about in Ace Ventura how it's like I love Jim Carrey, I love Courtney Cox. I don't really want to see them have sex though.
Yeah.
I have nothing against seeing Emma Stone have sex, but it's like and no disrespect. That's not me trying to sound disparaging. There's just something about Mark Ruffalo where like I like you, Mark Ruffalo, but I don't really want to see you have sex. Like, I'm glad I got to see your butt, but like at the same time, there's certain actors that you just are like, I don't know if I really want to see you have sex. And Mark Ruffalo is one of those guys, but he's, I mean, this is his first Oscar nomination, right? Like just.
Yeah. I don't think he got nominated. Well, he might've before this. I don't know. Like there have been so many movies where Mark Ruffalo should have been nominated. And I know you were really high on it. You're probably going to want to talk about Willem Dafoe in this movie. I was sort of going into this expecting Willem Dafoe. Oh yeah. I'm going to be with Ben, but I mean, not saying anything against Willem Dafoe in this movie, but like Mark Ruffalo is like, oh, he's got to be one of my favorites, if not my favorite in the supporting actor category at this point.
Okay, this is his fourth Oscar nomination.
but this is the crazy part. When you look at his other ones, Spotlight, I forget everything about that movie.
Okay.
But The Kids Are All Right and Foxcatcher, two other movies where he's playing not Mark Ruffalo roles. You know, maybe that's the secret. Just do something that is very not Mark Ruffalo-like and you'll get an Oscar nomination.
I know Bradley Cooper's been nominated for like 15 Oscars, but I mean, I think the majority of them are for a producer and director and a technical one. Yeah. I think that's about the same amount that Bradley Cooper's got. So Mark Ruffalo's in Bradley Cooper territory. I love on his Wikipedia page, he could have gotten an EGOT because he's won two Emmys. He's been nominated for a Grammy, 4 Oscar nominations, and he's been nominated for a Tony. So he's EGOT nominated. Is Mark? He's only one
that's
that
a man.
E there, but yeah, like 100% with Willem Dafoe. I mean, he deserves it over Willem Dafoe. Mark Ruffalo deserves over Willem Dafoe 100%. But I mean, like, there's just something about Willem Dafoe's performance that, again, in a year when Ryan Gosling's getting nominated, in a year when other people are getting nominated for, like, yes, I mean, no disrespect to Judd Hirsch, but we keep bringing him up like a year ago. Like, really? That got him a nominated? American Ferrera getting nominated for one speech? Like, I just, again, just rewatched Emily Blunt and Oppenheimer. I don't get it. Like, Emily Blunt's great. Don't get me wrong. Does she deserve an Oscar nomination? No. But, like, that's where I think
it's
like
a weak year for supporting categories.
But exactly. I agree with you. And like even watching Robert Downey Jr. again, I mean, Robert Downey Jr., I guess, grew on me a little bit in Oppenheimer. He's actually in it a lot more than I remembered, but still like, is that deserving? Like I would say Willem Dafoe is more deserving of a nomination in this category than Robert Downey Jr. Robert Downey Jr. is going to win it. And no disrespect to Robert. I'm glad he's going to be an Oscar winner. He's one of these actors where, you know, it's not Brendan Fraser levels of like, I'm that excited. But at the end of the day, if we leave this year with Robert Downey Jr. Oscar winner, I'm gonna be like, yeah, that sounds right. I'm happy with that because I like you, RDJ. But yeah, I think Willem Dafoe is one of these ones who, if he did win an Oscar, I'd be so happy. I mean, he's got to be approaching Glenn Close levels of nominations. Like, I mean, you know, like, don't get me started on Queen Glenn. But Willem Dafoe, you were talking about like yesterday or the other day with Killers of the Flower Moon, how Martin Scorsese is kind of like Steven Spielberg now, where it's just kind of like they're obviously trying to get that one more Oscar. Willem Dafoe to me is kind of like, well, I'm trying to win my first Oscar because like he's had a good streak in the last how many years. I swear every year he's almost in a movie where he's trying to get nominated. So it's going to land one day, Willem, but I'm sad that he didn't get nominated this year.
Yeah. I mean, this movie, I think it was second only Oppenheimer, 11 nominations.
It is. It's crazy.
This is where it gets tricky though, because most of these technical categories are the ones where I feel like Oppenheimer is the lock. I think Emma Stone's probably the close thing to a front runner, but I still don't necessarily think that she's a guarantee to win.
This is third favorite for Best Picture, though. That's an interesting one. Holdover second favorite. This is third favorite. So, well, yeah.
I will say this, again, I keep plugging it, but Letterboxd, which is really like the movie buff social media, it's starting to take off a lot. And one of the things that came out was that Oppenheimer was like leading as far as the highest ratings from members. But leading up to the Oscars, Poor Things has like overtaken it and is now like the highest rated.
Well, that's getting all the traction too, isn't it? Because I feel like if you look at some of the other awards, and obviously this got what? Comedy, musical, Golden Globe, and Emma Stone got it. So it's got traction. You feel like maybe it's just leaving its run a little bit late. Because even looking at the predictions, it's pretty much second favorite in almost every category it's in, except third for Best Picture. I mean, Yorgos Lanthimos is second favorite behind Christopher Nolan. Emma Stone, as you said, favorite, but this was same similar last year. I'm pretty sure Austin Butler was favorite, and then obviously Brendan Fraser ended up winning. Let's just reiterate that Brendan Fraser ended up winning. I mean, Mark Ruffalo's third favorite, adapted screenplay it's second last favorite, cinematography third favorite. But then you look at costume design behind Barbie, makeup and hairstyling behind Maestro. The nose is going to win the Oscar. Production design behind Barbie. And then score, the score, this has got a great score, third favorite, and then film editing, fourth favorite. Yeah, I'm with you. It's kind of in that tricky year where, like, the technical categories is where Oppenheimer is going to do well. And Barbie, I think that's, as we talked about yesterday, that's where Barbie's going to win its Oscars in the technical one. So it's kind of, I feel bad for it because it's probably not going to win any after being nominated for 10. And I feel this has got to win something. Like, this is, to me, such a unique film. And to get second behind Oppenheimer, and they're talking about, oh, is Oppenheimer going to beat Lord of the Rings, and is Oppenheimer going to beat Titanic and Ben-Hur, but,
I to me, the only one of these that I think it has a shot at is makeup. I think maybe the distaste people have for Maestro, which seems to be slipping. I don't know. Maybe this can sneak in there because it's very different makeup effects. Like, Maestro's is very convincing looking. This isn't meant to be convincing looking. Also, I just want to point out, man, does Yorgos Lanthimos love that fisheye lens, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Is there a reason for that in this movie? I'm not criticizing it. It's just he constantly keeps going back to that. It's not like during select sequences or during certain types of scenes. It's just randomly, let's throw the fisheye lens in there.
It's kind of like what I was talking about with The Zone of Interest the other day. Like, I like a film where you're choosing something that's a little bit different. I mean, you know, we're going to talk about Oppenheimer again with Christopher Nolan and what he does. And then, you know, like, what with J.J. Abrams, the lens flare, and people have it, but like, yeah, it's interesting because, you know, we talked about not being able to find a cinema that was showing this, and whether or not that was a valid cinema that was showing the valid copy of it.
Oh, that's so lucky to have that last minute edition.
I know, I really was, but like, I kept watching this thinking, like, is this cinema still showing the correct version, or is this still an interesting version? But then I realized, like, okay, this is the style. So yeah. It's cool running. We can't go up copying anyone's style. We've got our own kind of style.
I'm going to say I'm still going to buy this movie.
Yay.
It's sort of, for rankings, it's sort of on level with Zone of Interest, where it's like I had certain issues, and similar to Killers of the Flower Moon, is that grouping of what'll probably end up being the 6, 7, 8 category here. But just for the fact that I really did feel like, and maybe this is just because I enjoyed the story they were telling in that last half hour, but it was so rushed that you couldn't really enjoy it. It was my frustration with, you've got something that really would work here. Give it some time. Take some time away from somebody. Or even if you want, like, if you're going to commit to a 2-hour, 20-minute movie, commit to a 2-hour and 30-minute movie and just give us a proper final act of this movie that I'm going to put it below Zone of Interest. So this would be, of the ones we've done so far, third last for me. So this will be currently number 7 for me.
It's a buy for me, and I'm putting this at number 3. I really enjoyed it. I mean, my top 3 right now are all 3 movies that I could easily watch again. Holdovers, American Fiction, and Poor Things. I could enjoy them, watch them again, and get the same entertainment out of it. I think my top 3 are my, like, that is that category for me. And kind of spoiler alert, it's not changing. Oppenheimer's not in the top 3. So my top 3 are kind of locked in, and my number 1 movie is The Holdovers. So, yeah, we'll obviously go over that tomorrow. Noah sent us his final ranking, so we know his thoughts on Poor Things as well. But we'll maybe touch on that tomorrow. But, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And again, it was kind of, I think all top 3 of mine this year, I wasn't expecting that. Like, I really didn't know anything about them. Even with Poor Things, I hadn't seen a trailer. I had read that one article going, like, controversial sex in this movie. I'm like, oh, this sounds weird. But yeah, like, other than that, thoroughly enjoyed it. And maybe I'm going to do that every year now with the Oscars, like, outside of your standard Barbies and Oppenheimers, which we would have seen already. Maybe I'm just going to go into every year blind and not know much about them, because I think that adds more of a unique experience when I don't know anything about these films. So yeah, no, thoroughly enjoyed this film.
So that'll bring us to tomorrow, last day, Oppenheimer, movie we've already discussed. Maybe our opinions change on it. I'll just say I haven't finished rewatching this movie. I've been at it since yesterday, literally at it since yesterday.
Yeah, you've been at it since you watched it at the cinemas. You haven't finished yet.
Exactly.
Hurry up, Christopher.
but like, I had my issues with it when we reviewed it back in what, July, when it first came out. Not a lot of my opinions are going to change this movie. There's new things I picked up on, but I found it to be a very different experience watching it a second time around, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, I agree.
But then, of course, we're also going to get into our predictions for all the categories and then give you Noah's rankings, which is what it's really about.
Yeah, I agree with you completely about Oppenheimer, I think. And I'm guessing, like, it's an experience seeing it in the cinema. Yeah, like, it's all levels of whatever I got out of watching it. Again, it's a far too long movie, but it's enjoyable. It's got issues. Does it deserve the amount of Oscars it's going to win? Maybe. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Yeah.
All right. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. We also just had our Ghostbusters 1 episode drop.
What an episode.
Amazing.
It was so good.
We're going to have 24 coming up in a couple days, but Oppenheimer, and then just watch the Oscars to see who's right between Ben and I, because I think Ben usually wins on the predictions, even though his taste in movies is far inferior to mine.
Read the odds, Colin. Read the odds.
I do every year, and then I try to overanalyze. So I'm going to try to not overanalyze this year. I'm like, they're going to award this one, so I'm not going to award this, so I gotta make my game. But that'll be it. My name is Colin, and she grabbed me in my hairy area.
I think you need to report Jamie. My name is Ben, and why keep it in my mouth if it is revolting?
Thanks for downloading this episode of the Oz Network. Make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to the podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or by copying our RSS feed into your preferred podcast provider. And while you're there, please drop us a rating and leave us some feedback. You can also be sure to stay up to date with all the latest episodes and happenings from the show, as well as finding out how you can get involved in upcoming episodes by following our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as getting everything you need under one roof at theoznetwork.net. Thanks again for listening, and we'll speak to you next time. Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favorite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah.
If you answered yes to one, two, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon. That's right. Your favorite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. Wow! For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made.